Right now, time for the squeaky wheel. Summer travel season is very different this year. Even if you want to go to Europe, the EU doesn't want you, given our continued struggles with COVID-19. So any traveling will likely be in our cars and trucks, and those can act up from time to time. So let's talk with an expert. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call the squeaky wheel. Zach, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Always fun. Thank you.
Why don't we start with the fact that it's getting hotter as time goes on, obviously, as we get further into July here, and air conditioning. I've been always mystified by how it all works. I know you get compressors, pumps, coolant, blah, 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 but not much beyond that. Do you still have to put stuff into an air conditioner? Is there a year beyond which you don't need to, like, recharge the coolant?
Well, the answer is yes. You still have to put stuff in an air conditioner system. And it's whatever that stuff is, depending on the year, make, and model of your car, is just the generic term is it's a refrigerant.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole system works on the principles of pressure and phase changing of that refrigerant. So as that refrigerant evaporates and condenses and the various pressures associated with those phase changes cause the refrigerant to soak up or absorb all the heat out of the air from inside your car and then let that heat go outside, and it works just like your air conditioner at home.
Okay, so what has to get put in there? That the actual refrigerant has to get put in? There's not something you can do yourself, or can you?
Well, I think most shop owners and technicians would strongly discourage a do-it-yourself or to buy a can of refrigerant, but you can buy a can of refrigerant at the parts store. There's a lot of risks involved in injecting what's called a pound can. Mm-hmm. It's usually a pound of refrigerant that you buy, and they give you this little hose, and you can inject it right into your system. But the do-it-yourselfer doesn't have the right tools in order to determine how much refrigerant the system is requiring, assuming the system has a leak. Not all causes of malfunctioning air conditioning units are from a leak. They can malfunction in other ways and still have a full charge. So if you try and inject more refrigerant into your system, you could do severe damage to the system. And so it's really just best left to an expert. I can't tell you how many times we've had people come in and make an appointment for air conditioning, and my staff is trained to ask them, have you tried to work on this yourself? And very often, it's usually a man, will say, yes. very rarely does a woman come in and say, I went to the parts store and bought a pound can of refrigerant and tried to inject it into my system.
Yeah, men are often not willing to admit that they're in over their heads, I think, with some of this stuff. Not to overgeneralize here, but, you know, I've been in that situation myself. It's like, of course I could do this. Nothing to it. And then you got all these parts in your hand. You have no idea what goes back together where. And then you're going down to Zach and saying, hi, can you fix what I broke?
Yeah. So the main, you know, the heart of the system is called your compressor or your pump. And that is, it's usually belt-driven. Sometimes they're electric nowadays on newer models of cars, especially electric cars. But that pump, just like in your home unit, it is pushing your refrigerant through a big cycle of phase changes. And so the first thing that, the reason it's called a compressor is it compresses the refrigerant, which usually has a boiling point of something like 40 below zero. That's how cold this refrigerant is, which is why it absorbs heat so well.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it compresses that refrigerant and pushes it through what's called an orifice, where it actually turns into a mist as it passes through. It's kind of like a spray bottle. If you were spraying water, taking that water from a liquid to a vapor, misting it, and as it mists, that's when it begins to evaporate, and that the orifice helps that phase change from into a vapor. And when it changes phases, is when it really soaks up the heat, and so then it gets it absorbs all of that heat. And this is happening in the ducting underneath your glove box, and underneath your steering wheel, there's a bunch of ducting under there. And then it absorbs, there's a little radiator down there. It's called an evaporator, because that's where the heat is being absorbed and the phase change is happening. And then after it absorbs the heat, it gets pumped back out through to a condenser where it changes from a warmer gas, and it condenses back down to a liquid and lets the heat go during the condensation process. And then it basically makes that cycle all over again. So there's various ducting and tubing and lots of O-rings that make the seals of the connections. And the big difference between your home unit and your car unit is the type of refrigerant used, and the fact that the reason your home unit lasts so long without needing, you know, you don't need to go repair it all the time. It needs basic service, but hopefully not too much repair, mm-hmm. is because that home unit just sits there on a little concrete, you know, cylindrical slab or whatever. Your AC pump is right outside. It's not driving down the road being subjected to all of the elements, the potholes, the rocks coming off of semi-trucks in front of you, the extreme, you know, weather variations, and the air flowing through. You could have freezing sleet coming through components of that. And so there's a lot more forces and conditions put on your automobile air conditioning system, and that's why they really break. They get used a lot like a home unit, but they're driving down the road. They're a mobile unit, so they have problems.
Yeah, you make it sound like the home heat pump has a pretty cushy life, and I guess by comparison, it does.
It really does. It's a couch potato.
So, Zach, how often will you need to get service on the car system just to get refrigerant put in?
Well, it doesn't. You don't really need to service it. I guess I should say there is a couple of things you could do preventatively. Mm-hmm. Spraying your fins off on your condenser is a good thing, and that would be a preventative service. And you could do that every year, every couple of years. But other than that, you don't really need to service your unit unless it's acting up or having a problem.
So, yeah, my favorite is when you push the AC button along about the middle of May when it starts getting hot, and you hear this.
Yeah, that's a good noise. yeah, it's and a lot of people don't know that your air conditioning is in operation when you're defrosting as well, mm-hmm. because the air conditioning system, the refrigerant system, really helps dry the air. And so anytime you flip your vents to the defrost mode on any sort of modern car built in the last 20, 25 years, it's going to energize your air conditioning compressor if you have one and if the system is working right. So a sign that your air conditioning system isn't working well in the winter time would be if your defrost is not working very well. So that would be a sign that you want to bring it in, because ultimately a system that's not functioning correctly can damage itself. It has at least two different precautionary or safety sensors built into it, a high pressure and a low pressure cutout switch, so that if the pressures get dangerously low or dangerously high, the system will shut itself down. But, you know, our experience has been that those sensors are not calibrated to, by the time those sensors cut the system off, it's oftentimes too late and the damage has been done.
All right. So you'll be listening. And if you're not getting your windows defogged correctly in the winters, the defroster doesn't seem like it's keeping up, that would be one clue. And then, of course, you get funny chattering noises, or you're just staying too warm in the air conditioning in the summertime. It might be time for a checkup.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really subtle noise sometimes when the air conditioning compressor starts to give out, but it is commonly when people come in and complain of a subtle noise that they're hearing, it is the air conditioning compressor, and a lot of times they cycle on and off. Mm-hmm. So customers will describe the noise as, well, it's there and then it's not. Oh. And then it's there again and then it's not. And a lot of cars don't have cycling air conditioning compressors anymore, but still many cars do.
Now, it still runs the same way off a belt from the engine, so but the belt is always moving on it, but when the air conditioner actually starts up, it basically turns a clutch on and engages what's been spinning, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. There's a clutch in that type of, that's called a cycling clutch orifice tube system, just to get technical. But yeah, not all cars now use the cycling clutch. There's all sorts of new compressor designs out there meant to reduce engine drag.
Yeah, because that was the thing you used to feel with the older cars. You're driving up a hill and your air conditioning goes on, and all of a sudden you're down about 5 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. On my old Toyota T100 truck, you can really feel the air conditioner bog that thing down, and the truck is already underpowered by today's standards. So I have to do the old dad trick and turn my air conditioner off when I'm going over the pass.
I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one who does that, but yeah, I've done that many times. It's like, oh, things are getting steep here. Click, off goes. We're going to get warm, people. Hang on.
Well, I remember as a kid, my dad would not let us ever crack the windows if the air conditioning was on.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a dad thing. You just had to really obey the rule of the driver. And nowadays, sometimes I turn my air conditioning on with the windows down just to defy him still.
All right. Car care and psychology with Zach Edwards on this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. You're welcome to join the conversation. Talk about your dad moments or what's been going wrong with your car or truck at 800-838-3760 by phone. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Here is a call from John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. So I bought a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle about 8 months ago. And I drive, I'd say two-thirds of the time it's all electric. And about the only time the engine starts is if I take a long trip. So the oil change interval is 6 months or 6,000 miles, whichever comes first, which seems excessive. I know it's not like that in other countries sometimes. But do I need to change the oil so often? Because when I'm in town, you know, it only runs on a long trip. So it's not this thing of, you know, you run it for a few minutes. I mean, electric mode in town. I wish I didn't have to change oil so often, but I'm afraid that if I don't, I'll lose my warranty.
Ah, okay, good point. So so let me understand one thing about plug-in hybrids. You don't have a choice, though. I mean, it's going to go to hybrid when it feels like it needs to, right?
So it's not a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they call it that, but it's electric until the battery runs out. I can go 67 miles an hour electrically. I go about 25 miles. And in town, I just plug it in again, or I don't drive more than 25 miles in town.
Mm-hmm.
But once the battery has run out after 25 miles, then the engine turns on, and it becomes a gasoline vehicle. It's a Subaru Crosstrek.
Mm-hmm.
Crosstrek, I think, yeah. So my question is, yes, do I have to change the oil so often for the sake of the vehicle, as opposed to just for the sake of the warranty?
All right. That's a great question. Thanks for that, John. And why don't you throw in there, Zach, too, the kind of fuel, because I've talked to some hybrid owners who say, no, you got to have high test with this one.
Yeah, so that's a great question, John. And what I would tell you is the manufacturers, and I know Subaru is like this, set forth their maintenance schedule based on engineering and testing and repeated testing, I should say, and past engineering experience. And so if they are requiring that oil change interval, then that's really what you should do at a minimum. And I think in this case, the minimum is fine, every 6 months or 6,000 miles, whichever comes first. A lot of it depends on the type of oil that's required and the engineering in that lubricant and the type of protection needed in the engine and the various other components that work with that engine. And so I would really encourage you to just do the oil changes as outlined in the scheduled maintenance manual. Oil changes are relatively cheap compared to engine and other powertrain component replacement, and we've talked about this a lot on the show before. that as cars become more and more sophisticated, they become much more expensive to replace components. They become a little more expensive to maintain, but disproportionately more expensive to replace major components. And so maintenance becomes that much more critical on such a sophisticated piece of machinery like that. And so I wouldn't try and cheat on the oil change schedule. And with the fuel, again, I always tell customers, you know, inside your fuel filler flap, there is the fuel recommendation. It's also obviously in your owner's manual, but our owner's manuals are, you know, 200 pages now, so a lot of people aren't ever going to crack those open. But you can just look inside your fuel filler flap, and it will tell you exactly what type of fuel, what grade of octane is required. And, you know, some cars do take premium, and when they take premium, you have to use premium. And you can get away without using premium in the short term, and your car can compensate for not having premium. But if you repeatedly deny it that the proper octane of fuel, and your car is repeatedly then compensating for a lower grade of octane, then your computer system in your car has the ability to adapt to that reduction in performance, and over time your car is going to perform less and less well and can suffer long-term damage. So the moral is just to do what the manufacturers say. They really are looking out for your best interest. I know Subaru wants to build a car that lasts a very long time. They pride themselves on their cars lasting for decades. And I even remember their commercial that says, you know, they have more high mileage cars on the road than any other car, or something to that effect. So they're putting forth that oil change schedule for your benefit. So I would just stick with it.
All right, so we're just basically following the engineer's design recommendations. This is what they built into it, so stick with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take another call here on the Squeaky Wheel. You're welcome to join as well, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Prescott in Ashland. Welcome to the exchange.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi.
Okay, I got a quick question getting back to the AC thing. I have an old 85 Land Cruiser FJ6 wagon, and when I got
Sweet.
It, it had a crack in the... Yeah, I know, believe me. I can't tell you how many people keep trying to buy it off me. And all of us wave to each other as we're driving around town.
Oh, yeah, special club you're in.
Yeah. But anyways, when I got it, it had a crack in the top of the radiator, and the AC never worked. So I yarded the radiator out and took it over to Action to have them weld it stuff. But at the same time, I just ripped all the AC stuff out because it never worked. And I was just like, well, whatever. I didn't really care. I just rolled the windows down. But I've always had problems with my defrost not having much power. And I'm wondering if the fact that I yarded all that out, since you were talking that those things relate to each other, if maybe there's something that I need to do, or if that's related to the fact that I have a real weak thing, or if that just has to do with maybe, you know, something else.
You know, I would say that has everything to do with why your defrost is not working very well.
Even on an 85, you think it would have been part of the defrost?
I think so. You know, the Land Cruiser was the flagship of Toyota's models back then, and I can do a little checking and be certain, because we work on a lot of those cruisers, and we have some really nice ones that come in. But
I've got the biggest beater in town, just to let you know.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I think I know all the cruisers in town. I see them, and I'm always admiring them. But yeah, so I don't know if you're not going to like this answer, but it's a bummer you ripped all that out, because it probably could have all been saved you know, we do a conversion now. Instead of using what was nicknamed Freon back then, that was R12. We convert R12 systems to R134A, which is a much cheaper refrigerant, and the conversion process isn't too expensive in comparison. And then a lot of you know, that the componentry there was almost bulletproof, and it worked quite well with a retrofit, and that
well,
would
I still have
make
all
your
the parts.
That's great. So it's worth considering putting it all back together, because I'm almost certain that the simple computerized HVAC system, which is not really computerized at all, it's just probably a switch that when you flip your lever to the defrost mode, there's a little switch on the back of that panel that energizes the air conditioning system to aid in the defrost. And it was pretty primitive, but it was a great idea that when they finally came up with it. And
is there a workaround to kind of bypass it?
I mean, no. You just need the drying component of the air conditioning is in the air conditioning system itself. Otherwise, you're just trying to use heat, and it just takes a lot longer.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, it takes forever when I'm at Mount Ashland, and I got to defrost my thing. I just got to let my truck run for like 10 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It takes forever.
Well, and the other thing that we see a lot is, you know, your truck should warm up relatively quickly. And a lot of old rigs like that, sometimes old timer mechanics would just take the thermostats out and because they saw them as unnecessary. But a thermostat really aids, it works in two different ways. It stays closed so that you can warm up as quickly as possible. And then it opens so that you can cool down.
I made that mistake with one of the Subaru I had years ago where I took the thermostat out and I was overheating all the time going up over, you know, because it wasn't allowing it to, like, you know, do its cycle.
Right. Yeah, gentlemen, we gotta call it quits here because the music's playing. But it sounds like, an idea for maybe putting some of the air conditioning hardware back into that 85 Land Cruiser. Quite a club, it sounds like, Zach.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Prescott and Ashland, thanks for the call and the question. And Zach Edwards, as always, from Ashland Automotive, thanks for joining us once again for another edition of The Squeaky Wheel.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
All right, talk to you next month. That will do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Thank you for listening. We have more coming up in hour two. Please stay tuned.